This is Audible.
Get Over It, Thought Therapy for Healing the Hard Stuff by Elma Van Zandt. Dedication. This book is dedicated to the elder of the eldest grandmothers of all people, all races, and all nations, who were the living embodiments of grace and humility, demonstrating to the world how to move through adversity with dignity, and the elder of the eldest grandfathers of all people, all races, and all nations, who were the living embodiments of commitment to family and responsibility to community, demonstrating to the world that manhood is a condition of mind and being that cannot be bought or sold. I acknowledge you and call you to an awakened state to infuse the presence and power of your lives into the conscious minds of your descendants who are alive today. Ashe, ho metakwio atsin. What you think means more than anything else in your life, more than what you earn, more than where you live, more than your social position, and more than what anyone else may think about you. George Matthew Adams. Introduction. There is a light, so intense, so powerful, that nothing other than itself can exist in its presence. It is a light that never goes out. Certainly, no lie or deception, no boundary or defense can remain intact in its presence. It is an enduring power, and yet it is tender. This light is natural. When recognized, you do not think twice about it. You know that anything that cannot stand the heavenly heat of this light is to be cast aside swiftly by conscious choice. This light is your soul's light. The choice is yours to make. Iyanla's journal entry, incorporating lines from the dissolving light card presented in the Rumi Oracle, an invitation into the heart of the divine by Alana Fairchild. Because of the work I have done over the past 3 decades and the increasingly dehumanizing circumstances that have been normalized around the globe, I am painfully aware that people of all genders, races, and ages, and all political, social, and economic groups are suffering at unprecedented levels. Many are suffering from psychological, emotional, and spiritual torment they do not understand, cannot seem to shake, or are unable to move beyond. Others are suffering because of habitual behaviors that motivate reckless decision-making and poor choices, keeping them stuck in repetitive cycles of dysfunction and despair. For the purpose of the healing work that will be offered as the Get Over It process, I am defining suffering in the following way. Voluntary participation in situations and circumstances that diminish one's capacity and potential to thrive or flourish as a function of a belief that one is powerless to do anything else. The Reader's Digest of suffering would be this. There are those who suffer from crippling fears about the future. Mentally, they conjure up the worst possible scenarios and the most tragic outcomes that trigger debilitating emotional responses. Their mental images and their corresponding feelings become the reason and/or excuses these people use to stay immersed in and engaged with a familiar pain. This group of sufferers is far surpassed in number by those who wrestle with, run from, or mentally and emotionally massage their tragic or traumatic past. They are stuck in the story of who they are and what is possible. They have been replaying in their minds a tragic script from which they determine that everything that has happened will more than likely continue to happen. Very often in this scenario, the suffering is evidenced by careless, reckless, self-debasing, or self-injurious behavior. More often, these are the people who do not believe their lives matter. Very common in both groups is the silent, terrorizing self-talk that keeps them enslaved to circumstances and experiences that destroy their capacity, and often their desire to lead fulfilling and joyful lives. This level of human suffering is heart-wrenching, intense, and absolutely unnecessary. When I meet individuals who are suffering, whether their experience reflects mental, emotional, or physical pain, I often listen as they try to convince me that they have done everything possible to change their situation. Some people will vehemently challenge and/or reject offers of support and possibilities for remedy. With great precision and detail, they are able to recount the stories of why their efforts didn't work and how they even, in some cases, made the situation worse. I have also met individuals who, because of the depth of trauma they have lived through, have given up. Resigned to a life of misery, they accept their suffering as their fate. Frequently, my first attempt at offering suffering individuals another way of seeing their experience is met with fierce resistance, which I call the fight to be right. What I have discovered is that people unwittingly fight to maintain ownership of the very limitations that cause their suffering. Unfortunately, while fighting for their limitations, most fail to realize this is not a fight they want to win. They are stuck in a way of thinking that triggers certain emotional responses that in turn hinder their capacity and diminish their willingness to consider anything new. Rather than engage them in a mental or emotional sparring match, I ask one simple question. What is your prayer? When an individual seriously contemplates this question, a tidal wave of reason threatens his or her plausible excuses and reasonable rationales. Stories of how pain and suffering should or can be tolerated and accommodated begin to recede. The ego has very few arguments that can survive the power of an earnest and heartfelt prayer. No matter how much we would like to blame our sufferings on people and circumstances seemingly beyond our control, the bottom line is staggeringly simple. Anything and everything we experience is a function of what and how we think. How we think determines our feelings and behavior. How we behave determines the nature and quality of our lives. This also means that any emotional investment, i.e. feelings, that are attached to a particular thought pattern will resurface each time the pattern is engaged or entertained. To neutralize and eventually eliminate an unconscious, unproductive pattern of thought and the associated feelings, a steady stream of new thoughts must be introduced. I have come to understand that when individuals are suffering through unpleasant or undesirable situations and circumstances, they are often unaware of how they participate in creating or recreating their experience. In severe cases, when there is an addiction to suffering, meaning that the individuals have accepted their experiences as normal and expect them to remain as they are, there is often a flat-out refusal to acknowledge or accept we are what we think as the truth. It is a matter of accepting responsibility for the state and condition of our mind. For some reason, average human beings will resist this premise and the responsibilities associated with it. I, too, have been in that place, resisting, dismissing, and flat-out rejecting the notion that I had the power to change the circumstances of my life with a thought. Regardless of how it was presented to me, I felt as if I were being blamed for my own suffering. It was not until my repeated attempts to fix my life had failed that I became ruthlessly committed to having dominion over the circumstances of my life. Only then could I hear, comprehend, and accept how my thoughts, feelings, and patterns of behavior determine my ability to survive and then thrive. It was not an easy task to undertake or a simple shift to make. However, my desire to be a better example and to create a better life for my children kept me on the path. In our era of technology-driven lifestyles and social media-based relationships, we have become more attached to our multiple external devices than we are to the power created by our own personal thoughts. The more we are attached to our devices, the more separated we are from our internal intuitive light. We crave friends we have never actually met and virtual likes to demonstrate our popularity and acceptance. When our human joys and sorrows are restricted to 140 characters and our most intimate experiences are turned into posts that become cheap fodder for the scrutiny and judgment of online bullies, we are witnessing the ripple effects of our digitized thoughts. If we were to consider how much time we spend seeking external instead of internal validation, the reason why suffering in America, real and imagined, has reached epidemic levels would become clear. Today, the scales of humanity have tipped perilously toward the lowest common denominator. Due to what has been called the public prostitution of pain, we have become desensitized to our own suffering because some people are getting paid to put their suffering on display. We have turned human failure, suffering, and dysfunction into the ingredients of highly rated entertainment, dubbing it reality. While what we watch may in fact be real, there is rarely an antidote offered to address what are for some deeply traumatic life experiences. Yet, rather than seeking to eliminate our own suffering or change our own experience, we aim simply to suffer less than others. Many people have begun to question and challenge these realities that are playing out before their eyes and have been inspired to seek a greater sense of dominion in their lives, a growing inner spiritual imperative demanding that we learn to live more peacefully and authentically has resulted. Men and women of all ages are increasingly ready to accept that there is a spiritual antidote that can transform their traumatic life experiences and the resulting patterns of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that have produced their suffering. While this approach imposes upon us a great deal of responsibility, it is also a reminder of our inherent and divine power as individuals. How do we end our suffering? The answer to that question and the premise of Get Over It is not new. In fact, it's very simple. If you do the work to change your thought patterns, your life will change accordingly. And Get Over It, I'm offering you the information, tools, and processes required to make this inner transformation a reality in your life. In other words, I'm offering you the work that I call thought therapy, a proactive, self-directed, pragmatic daily practice for identifying and transmuting the source of your personal suffering, your dominant negative thought patterns, DNTPs. Our digital addictions have fostered within us a need for instant information. We want everything fast and easy. The Get Over It process, which will help you transform the limitations, restrictions, resistance, and possible suffering you may be experiencing in your life, is anything but fast and easy. However, it is simple. There's an important distinction between easy and simple in that it doesn't take much effort to accomplish this work. A few minutes, several times a day, is all that's required. Doing the thought therapy work can be as simple and straightforward as taking your daily vitamins, but only you can purchase your supplements, count out the recommended dosage, pour your beverage, pop the pills in your mouth, and swallow. Consistently making the choice to do something, even something simple, isn't always easy. The work you are choosing to do to change your thought demands that you begin to pay attention to what you are thinking moment by moment. It also requires that you challenge long-held thoughts and beliefs by choosing new thoughts that are positive, supportive, and productive. Some would call this cognitive behavioral therapy. I call it thought therapy. In other words, getting your mind right so that you can live better. Long before I knew about or studied anything about the so-called therapeutic process commonly used in psychotherapy, I figured out that my mind was a powerful agent for change. It wasn't professional or therapeutic. It was a personal necessity. I had discovered that both conscious and unconscious thoughts are habitual. I realized that every thought we think is attached to a memory, and every memory is attached to a feeling. I came to recognize and believe in my own life that this cycle of thinking and feeling, much of which is unconscious, determined my behavior. After many trials and errors, I understood that if I wanted to change the condition and experience of my life, I had to learn to pay attention to every thought and every feeling so that I could make different choices. To do this, I had to practice and learn to live my A-game, which consists of the four A's: awareness, acknowledgement, acceptance, and action. The Get Over It process will teach you the same. In much the same way that we receive an alert to notify us when a text message has arrived, we must now create an internal prompt that makes us aware that recurring thoughts have landed and are poised to disrupt our sense of peace and well-being. These are the familiar thoughts, the habitual ones, that we may no longer be aware we are thinking. Don't worry. The Get Over process offers you tools that will support you in becoming aware of your thoughts so that you can acknowledge and accept what they are in order to do something new and facilitate a change in your mind. Many of the people I have worked with confirm that once they have committed to thought therapy, the work is not hard. Yet, the level of commitment necessary often presents great difficulty because the mind is like a muscle. It requires regular workouts to grow stronger. When you stop exercising that muscle, its strength wanes and it grows flabby. Many of us live flabby lives because we are unable to make the commitment to consistently do the work necessary to strengthen our minds and thereby improve our lives. We want full-time rewards for part-time devotion and commitment. But half measures aren't enough. The process I describe in the following pages requires being willing to do more in order to be more, and only then will you have more. The more committed you are to a life free from mental, emotional, and in some cases physical suffering, the more consistent you will be about taking the time required to use the tools presented here. If you commit to doing the work consistently and completely, you'll experience the desired shift within yourself. Now for the easy part. The primary tools are prayer and affirmations, time-honored spiritual practices that have proven value in the process of changing one's life. These are supported by conscious breath work, thymus thumping, and thought therapy eye movements, which are spiritual energy-clearing tools. When embraced and mastered, these tools can and will alter the biochemistry of your brain. In this book, you will find 42 prayers and affirmations designed to neutralize and eliminate the most common dominant negative thought patterns I have encountered throughout my years of working with clients. While most individuals believe that their own childhood traumas, personal situations, and unique life experiences make their story and experience different from and worse than everyone else's, I have found this is simply not true. A playwright friend of mine asserts that there are basically 10 common human dramas. This means that we are all living some version of one of these stories. each set in a unique location with unique characters, unfolding at a rate of progression unique to us, yet all leading to the same end. But I believe that mental, emotional, and physical suffering are unnecessary and not at all required by the benevolent forces of life. If you currently have the exact opposite of what you desire, I can guarantee that you have an existing dominant negative thought pattern operating in your mind. With consistent prayer and affirmation, your DNTPs can and will be transformed. Consider this turning point in my history of dominant negative thought patterns. At one time, I thought and believed that the harder I worked, the more money I would make and the happier I would be. Thoughts are mental energies caused by stimulation to or activity within the brain. They are short-lived events that can be generated as an idea or in response to a memory. A feeling is an internal sensation triggered by the central nervous system. They arise as a reaction to or a response resulting from either a physical or mental experience or a perception of external stimuli. The DNTP that I held was, you must work hard to make money and money will make you happy. The thought was work hard. The feeling was happy. In direct competition for space in my mind was another dominant negative thought pattern. There is never enough. I learned this one during my childhood and had mastered it for most of my adult life, which gave rise to a great deal of fear and anxiety in my consciousness. What it looked like was this. I would take on more than I could ever expect to accomplish, trying to generate the experience of wealth and happiness I desired, yet believing it would never happen, because not only could I never do enough, there would never be enough time or money or anything else I wanted for me to truly be happy. Sounds crazy, right? For a good portion of my life, I said yes to everything that was asked of me. I worked long hours, just as I had watched my mom do. I would undertake grueling tasks, just as my grandmother had taught me, in order to prove that I could accomplish these tasks, even while believing I could not. I made increasing amounts of money that never seemed to fulfill my needs or desires. This interplay of thinking one thing, feeling something else, and doing a third thing, all while believing that you will never get what you want, is what makes suffering seem normal and acceptable to many folks. The make more money part of my pattern was in direct conflict with the there's never enough part. The challenge was that I was miserable and tired all the time. I began to resent people who asked me to do things, and I hated myself for saying yes to them. I also discovered that I was spending more money than I was making because I was too busy to plan expenditures appropriately and wisely. I started praying for an easier life, one in which all my needs were met without so much hard work. It was 1989 when I discovered John Randolph Price's work, The Abundance Book. He offered a 40-day prayer plan with 10 affirmations that needed to be repeated daily. The plan was to pray consistently at the same time in the same place for 40 days in order to bring one's mind into alignment with the higher vibration and energy of abundance. He offered one written prayer that had to be signed and dated at the beginning of the process. That, he said, was your contract with the universe and God. Then he gave 10 different affirmations that were to be rotated throughout the process, one a day, to neutralize and override the old thought patterns. The affirmation that stuck with me and became the new foundation of my life was this. Money is not my supply. No person, place, or condition is my supply. my awareness, understanding, and knowledge of the all-providing activity of the divine mind within me is my supply. My consciousness of this truth is unlimited, therefore my supply is unlimited. That did it for me. I knew that God is the divine mind ever-present at all times. Learning to tap into and rely on God, or the universal energy of good, opened me to an entirely new way of thinking. Prayer is the way we communicate with God. Affirmation is the way we reprogram the mind. This dynamic thought therapy duo became my ticket out of my DNTPs, my conflicting emotional states of being, and my unproductive ways of behaving. Getting over my habitual thought patterns became a matter of faith, trust, and scientific experimentation. As a result of the 40-day process, doing what I loved was more beneficial than just working for money. I realized that my life did not have to be hard, and I had no obligation to be miserable to have what I needed and desired. For me, this was more than a shift from negative to positive thinking. My commitment to the thought therapy process of changing my dominant negative thought patterns around money resulted in a major transformation in every area of my life, including my relationships. As a result, I ended a long-term relationship with a married man and published my first book. Over the next few years, I used the process in other areas of my life, including parenting, health issues, and even finding parking spaces. By identifying and neutralizing my own dominant negative thought patterns, i.e., what I had been taught or had come to believe as a result of my experiences, I eliminated the way I voluntarily participated in my own suffering. Lack, limitation, and restriction, whether real or imagined, are all forms of suffering that can be eliminated through awareness, acknowledgement, acceptance, and action. The Get Over It process is so much more than a prayer book. It is a remedy for the thoughts and thought patterns that you may not realize you're thinking or holding in consciousness. It is a collaboration between the divine, God, and your higher self that actually becomes your therapist at every stage of the process. The energy clearing tools I discuss, conscious breathwork, thymus thumping, and thought therapy eye movements will build your physical and mental immunity against the impact of long-held, unconscious, habitual, dominant, negative thought patterns that plague your life. They will support the metabolizing or processing of your emotional energy so that you can synthesize and activate the new information you're ingesting through the prayer and affirmation process. They'll also enhance your mental and emotional states of being in a way that will help you integrate and maintain the energetic benefits of this work. In this way, the Get Over It thought therapy process is a mind-body-spirit experience that will have an impact on all aspects of your being. The other good thing about the thought therapy process is that it's freely available. Once you become thoroughly familiar with the process, you'll have a lifelong tool that can and will support you in making immediate and lasting changes in the way your mind operates. The exciting thing I have discovered is that once a dominant negative thought pattern is neutralized, you will be very aware when it attempts to resurface in your mind. On rare occasions when I find myself thinking a particular thought or feeling a particular way, the affirmative prayer I use to neutralize the thought will immediately pop into my mind. For example, when completing this manuscript, I had a serious encounter with not good enough. It was rough. Something I read triggered an old feeling, and before I could stop myself, I was knee-deep in a thread of self-diminishing thoughts such as these. The book isn't good enough. I'm not a good enough writer. No one will ever buy the book. People are going to criticize me. I am a total and complete failure, blah, blah, blah. I even wrote my editor and told her so. As those thoughts began to rampage through my mind, another one surfaced. Dear God, please help me see this rightly. Instantly, I became aware that I had been working for 6 hours with no food. It was a beautiful sunny day, and I wanted to go outside, and the chair I was sitting on was starting to hurt my butt. Instead of following the DNTPs to their conclusion, I prayed the prayer of inadequacy offered in the book, hit the save button, and went into my kitchen to make myself a salad. It was just that simple. When I returned to my work 90 minutes later, everything began to flow. By offering you the Get Over process, it is my intention to support you in learning how to identify negative thoughts, awareness, challenge negative thoughts that cause self-destructive feelings, acknowledgement, replace negative thoughts with more positive ones, acceptance, modify dysfunctional, unproductive, or self-destructive behavior, action. The way I will coach you through this thought therapy process is by offering you prayers and affirmations written specifically to neutralize your negative thought patterns and the emotional energy most often associated with those patterns. As a spiritual technician, I am offering you psycho-spiritual tools instead of traditional psychological ones. And if you are participating in traditional psychotherapy or counseling, all the better. This process is totally compatible with and supportive of traditional therapies. What I know to be true is that most of you will never end up on the therapist's couch. This does not mean that you cannot get help or be helped. The Get Over It process is a deeply spiritual thought therapy that will deprogram and reprogram your mind, shifting your habitual thoughts and feelings in a way that supports your desire to get over anything and everything that may be holding you back. Even if you cannot identify your exact DNTP, working with the prayer, affirmation, and one or more of the energy clearing tools of a DNTP that is closely related to what you are experiencing will have a powerful impact. Neutralizing any one negative thought pattern will bring you face to face with the one that has been most difficult for you to identify. The goal here is to modify how you think and change the emotional energy attached to the unconscious and habitual patterns of thinking. If you engage in the Get Over It process under the watchful eye of your higher self, and you set a clear intention, you will receive exactly what you need. The most important element of this process is willingness. Willingness to know, willingness to change, and willingness to heal and grow. Along with willingness, you must be ready. The real test will come when you become aware that what and how you have been thinking have created some of your most difficult challenges. At that point, your ego will rise to slam you up against a wall of disbelief and resistance. You will come face to face with the intimate details of your most debilitating and self-defeating stories. You will be tempted to curse me and put this book on the shelf with all of the other self-help books that you did not complete. Now that you are forewarned, here's your prescription. Don't do that. Pray. I am offering you a universal clearing prayer in Chapter 5 that you can apply to any situation. If that doesn't work, turn to any page in Chapter 7 and pray any prayer. Once you come back into your right mind, continue to do the work. The light of your soul is your bridge to a better experience of yourself and your life. Just as some electrical current flows through the walls of your home, some energetic current flows through your body. In the same way that you can flip a switch to tap into your home's electrical current and turn on the lights in a room, you can tap into the currents of energy that run through you and brighten the light in your soul. Flipping the switch to turn off your DNTPs will accomplish that. The work I am offering you here is designed to rewire your thinking and make better use of your connection to divine mind so that your soul light can shine. If you are ready, willing, and committed, there's never been a better time or greater need for you to share your infinite light. Remember these words as you begin this process. Simple and easy, ready and willing, awareness, acknowledgement, acceptance, and action. Ready? Set? Let's do this work. Part 1, The Fight to Be Right. Chapter 1, Miss Claudie's Files. We cannot change anything if we cannot change our thinking. Santosh Kalwar. People do what they do in response to what they think. That is, the information they have and how they interpret it in the moment of a particular experience. Often, what people do makes absolutely no sense to those watching them, and even less sense to the ones who are engaged in blind, irresponsible, or self-destructive behavior. It's not easy to watch loved ones go through a difficult experience. It's even more difficult when the someone who is going through the difficult experience is you. When friends or loved ones who patiently listen to your too often repeated tale of woe speak those three simple words, "Get over it," you may feel exasperated. Sometimes it's the tone of their voice. Oftentimes it's just not what you need or want to hear. In all situations, under all circumstances, the message behind those three words is so much easier said than done. Those words, get over it. Dismiss your difficult situations and your accompanying negative feelings as irrelevant, unimportant, or unacceptable, even though to you they are just the opposite. In many instances, by the time you hear those words come at you or reverberate through you, you've been stuck in a mental, emotional, or spiritual dead end for some time. Life is hard. Just ask newly single moms with no child support, displaced auto workers in cities stripped of manufacturing, downsized 50-somethings with no retirement savings, or stigmatized men and women returning to society after years of incarceration. It's hard to reestablish yourself after a divorce. It's hard to cover your basic expenses and stay on top of your student loans. It's hard to face a family health crisis when you have little or no insurance coverage. Even people who have done their best to do the right things in the right way at the right time may still find themselves facing astonishingly hard times and challenging situations. Yet, those who know the true meaning of achievement will tell you that their accomplishments were never entirely due to what they did or what happened for them. Something also had to exist within them. We're all overly familiar with the painful tales of the person who found personal, professional, or financial success, then lost it because of poor choices or bad behavior. Whether you're working toward it or had it and lost it, the level of fulfillment anyone finds and enjoys in this lifetime all boils down to this: how you think determines what you experience. The thoughts we have, the beliefs we hold, the behaviors we engage in when we're going through a life challenge or upset often leave a deep imprint on our consciousness. It's the little things that determine the quality of our lives. Little slights, little disappointments, little upsets piled one on top of another can become a mental or emotional catastrophe if they are not addressed. When these little things are added to the myriad of random childhood traumas and critical life changes we all experience, it's no wonder many of us have no clue how to deal with what we think or feel at any given moment. When we consider the debilitating human condition so many people have lived through and live with, get over it seems tantamount to saying, stop whining and complaining. That would probably work well if we could simply wash our brains out as a way to facilitate our forgetting. When we have been through something that has left a negative imprint on us, more than just our brains have been affected. What about our hearts? What about our spirits? These aspects of who we are that are also involved in the process of getting over something cannot be washed clean so easily. And these are the aspects of ourselves that bear the brunt of our difficult life experiences. Considering the power of the mind to create, the capacity of the heart to ache, and the energy carried in the spirit, getting over life's most difficult experiences can take more than just a positive mindset, the insistence of a friend, and a good mental shampoo. Dominant negative thought patterns. One of life's simplest yet most powerful truths is this. What we consistently think about and how we think about it will eventually show up in reality. Mahatma Gandhi, a man who accomplished the impossible, said that men often become what they believe. If I believe I cannot do something, it makes me incapable of doing it. But when I believe I can, then I acquire the ability to do it, even if I didn't have it in the beginning. Understanding what we consistently think about and how we feel in the midst of those thoughts is not an esoteric or New Age concept. It is a scientific fact, one formulated from actual data that has determined a direct link exists between our dominant thoughts, our emotions, and our actions. Research indicates that the average person has between 60 and 80 thoughts a day, of which 60 to 75% are unconscious, meaning you are not aware that you are thinking these thoughts. Mental health professionals and scientists alike have concluded that the goal cannot be to control every thought. That would be a futile exercise in today's world of overstimulation and the proliferation of digital devices. Instead, it is our dominant negative thoughts and beliefs that can and must be the focus of our attention. A dominant thought is an automatic, repetitive idea that creates a deep thread or impression in the brain. It is a thought or pattern of thoughts attached to a specific and frequently repeated emotional response. Our lives are shaped by our most dominant thoughts because these are the thoughts that mold our beliefs. Beliefs direct our expectations and actions. Actions determine the results we get in our lives. The subconscious mind. Dominant thoughts or beliefs determine how we live our lives because they are stored in the subconscious mind, the aspect of the mind that works nonstop to create whatever we think about. When the mind is consciously or unconsciously focused on traumatic experiences, unpleasant memories, and the long list of the things you do not want to experience, the energy of these thoughts becomes dominant in your mind and takes over as the basis of the mental attitude that governs your expectations. In life, you do not experience what you ask for. You experience what you expect. The expectations we hold are the fruits of the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is your memory bank, the cloud storage for all of your life's data. All your experiences, cultural nuances, learned knowledge, positive and negative memories, and achievements and failures are stored in the subconscious mind. It is the aspect of the mind that never sleeps. These subconscious thoughts become stimulated when you're faced with a choice or a decision, or when weighing pros and cons, possibilities and consequences. Any choice about what you will do next will stimulate a memory of what has happened before. The subconscious mind will sort through your memory bank for anything similar or familiar to what you are facing in the moment, and you won't be aware that your mind is doing it. The implication of this unconscious mental sorting process explains why we all act and react the way we do. The human computer brain. Most thought is generated or directed by one of the three primary conscious goals: understanding information, manipulating information, or generating and creating information. When an experience requires an understanding of information, the brain will recall, summarize, categorize, and assign a role to the information received. This is a psychological and evaluative process. Since the goal is understanding, evaluation of each thought, idea, or impulse related to the goal is considered. In the process of manipulating information, the brain will analyze, apply, induce, deduce, and problem solve. Manipulation requires the application of established beliefs and rules to produce a result or decision. This is a comparative process of thought, one in which, like a computer, the brain pieces together pre-existing patterns to create a new thought pathway without a qualitative assessment of the information being considered. In this way, the process of manipulating information is limited and uncreative. When generating or creating information, the brain will synthesize, predict, evaluate, and question. This is a process of the intellect working in harmony with emotion. Thought is generated in response to the impulses experienced within the body. Unfortunately, when intellectual awareness ends or negative energy is encountered, cooperation between thought and feeling ends. Thought then becomes focused on understanding and manipulating the information, which can be either a positive or negative process. The human brain is believed to be a much better computer than any man-made computer ever created because it is capable of processing information in two separate areas, the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. Understanding, manipulating, and generating or creating information takes place in the realm of the conscious mind. Deciding what to eat for dinner, formulating a response to a coworker you don't like, figuring out how to resolve the shortage in the monthly budget, and remembering how cute your 6-month-old son is are all conscious activities that move through the brain simultaneously. According to the Laboratory of Neuroimaging at the University of Southern California, the average person has about 48.6 conscious thoughts a minute. That equals about 70,000 thoughts per day. Other experts estimate that the mind thinks between 60,000 to 80,000 conscious and subconscious thoughts a day, averaging 2,500 to 3,300 thoughts per hour, which is incredible. However, if we could pay attention to each thought, we would discover that most of them are useless, unimportant bits of information that pass through the mind at warp speed. The random words we repeat, the observations the mind makes that we never speak aloud, repetitive thoughts about something we heard, songs we remember from long ago, questions about nothing meaningful, answers to questions we no longer remember, and a lot of stray facts pop in and out of the mind every moment. And it is these thoughts that create long-standing patterns of thought and belief that create major blockages and obstacles in our lives. These are the thoughts that originate in the subconscious mind. Once the conscious mind processes, sorts, and makes sense of the data received, it passes on the information to the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is the supercomputer. It is believed to be 80 times more powerful than the conscious mind because it finds patterns and relations faster, can deal with much more complex data, and even stimulates things much better than your conscious mind. Unlike the conscious mind, which executes the desired function and then moves on to something new, the subconscious mind continues to process data from the moment it receives the information to the moment it finds an answer. Millions of thoughts are processed each day. Researchers have determined that the subconscious thought process remains active while you sleep. The subconscious mind compares and analyzes all incoming data with everything that is in your memory. Anything you may have ever seen, heard, known, or understood until it finds a pattern or solution. And it is the subconscious patterning process that determines your state of mind or consciousness. Just in case this sounds or feels too scientific for you, let me break it down. We have thousands of thoughts that we don't know we're thinking. These thoughts have memories and feelings attached to them. When we encounter a familiar or similar experience that generates a familiar or similar feeling, the brain generates a familiar or similar thought. Sometimes we are aware of the thought associated with the feeling, but most often we're not aware of the thought. The thoughts that we don't know we are thinking generate feelings that are so familiar, we assume that what we're going through in the moment is the same as something we've been through before. This motivates us to do or not do specific things in order to avoid unwanted or unpleasant outcomes. This is what it means to be stuck. Because there are millions of thoughts being processed through your mind every minute, there is no way for you to be aware of all of them. The conscious mind evaluates and records thoughts and has no access to them until the subconscious mind pushes the results of the process into the conscious mind. If we add to this equation the external stimuli received from the physical world that gives rise to sensory sensations and new thoughts, it's easy to see why it's so difficult to determine what comes first, the thought or the feeling. Negative versus positive experiences. Everyone, at one time or another, entertains negative thoughts. The challenge comes when we pay homage to them by entertaining them repeatedly. It is then that negative thoughts become habitual, unconscious, and pattern-forming. For example, have you ever said, "Don't come too close to me, you might catch my cold"? Of course you have. Conversely, have you ever said, "Don't come too close to me, you might catch my beauty or my brilliance"? Probably not. Because of our dominant negative thoughts, we often go through life repeating the same mistakes over and over again, experiencing the very things we do not want because the programming imprinted in our minds has us essentially riding a merry-go-round. It takes more energy to process a negative experience than it does to process a positive one. When something unpleasant occurs, the mind will linger on the thought and experience to figure out, "Why did that happen to me? Why did she say that to me? Why did he do that to me?" The more unpleasant, difficult, challenging, or frightening the experience was, the more thoughts the mind will process in connection to it. As human beings, we hate to be wrong. We want to avoid being hurt, and we always want to be seen in a positive light. When negative feedback, destructive criticism, or unwanted correction comes at us, it not only triggers an attachment to similar past events, it deflates our good intentions in the present moment. When we add mental and emotional triggers, that is, the environment, authority figures, or emotional connections we have to certain people or things, to the circumstances of our current experience, the resulting negative or traumatic outcome only deepens the subconscious imprint that may already exist in the brain. This is not the same process the mind engages in for a positive experience. Rarely do we ask ourselves, why is this good thing happening to me? Or how can I create more of the pleasant feeling? In fact, more often than not, when something really wonderful or pleasant comes our way, we might even say, I can't believe this is happening to me. When we have a good or pleasant experience, we may remember it and even talk about it, but we do not mull it over. We take it in and move on. A pleasant experience may leave us feeling good or uplifted, but as soon as we hit a bump in the road, we forget the good and focus once more on the not so good. This happens because negative, traumatic, unhealed mental and emotional imprints from childhood experiences are activated each time you face a similar or what feels like a familiar situation. Core beliefs. We all have a file of beliefs about ourselves and our lives based on stories we heard or stories we've made up in reaction to experiences we've had. Some of those beliefs are positive, some of them are negative. The negative beliefs are the ones that create many of the challenges and issues we face in every aspect of life. We focus repeatedly on the negative stories, and more often than not, we are unconsciously fueled by negative emotional energy. These patterns of thought or core beliefs not only define our behaviors, assumptions, and expectations, they become the foundation for our understanding of how the world works and what we can, will, do, expect from others. As a psychological construct, a core belief is the essence of how we see, evaluate, and assess ourselves, other people, and the world. Core beliefs are often formed based on interpretations we made in childhood of what we saw, heard, or were led to believe was true about who we are. The way our adult caregivers responded to our behavior when we were children had a tremendous influence on the formation of our core beliefs. These subconscious core beliefs are triggered once we reach adulthood by situations that are similar to or closely aligned with experiences we had as children. Sharon, an ambitious paralegal who often engaged in critical thinking or problem solving, was completely unaware of the power of her core beliefs. However, she did notice that she had difficulty when it came to standing up for herself and sharing her perspective in situations involving both her work colleagues and her family members. Sharon recognized that in those situations, she often second-guessed herself. Even when she felt strongly about something, she would surrender her ideas, needs, or wants to the loudest or strongest personality in the room. The problem was intensified with the men she dated, whom she felt often dismissed or ignored her requests or desires. After several months of therapy and work with a coach, Sharon became aware that in the presence of a strong personality, she felt that what she had to say was not important. She recognized that this was the same pattern she experienced growing up with her brother, a star football player who'd always gotten the lion's share of her parents' time, attention, and praise. In fact, Sharon remembered that whenever she tried to talk to her father about something she needed or wanted, he would tell her, "That's not important right now. I've got to help your brother with something." Her mother would often say, "I know you think it's important, but it can wait." Sharon felt that her desires were subjugated to whatever her brother needed or wanted, and therefore, she was not important. As a result, while Sharon was always able to do for others and meet their needs, she had a difficult time asking for what she wanted or needed. After working with her therapist and coach, Sharon identified the core belief that who she was, what she wanted, and what she had to say were not important. Core beliefs such as Sharon's develop over time. They are strongly held and often inflexible because they are maintained by the tendency to focus on information that supports the belief.